Are you ready?
Yeah, always ready.
Hello, welcome to day Tuesday.
Ready and willing.
Six.
Who are Todd with Crystal? Already?
Yeah, I know. Tuesday, September 6th. I don't even understand that. Like, I've actually, like, I used to make jokes about how I have lost all sense of time. But, I mean, I have truly now lost all sense of time. I just don't even understand things. Like, when I see one, you know, on Facebook, they have those, like, memory things? Here's a memory from 7 years ago. And I go, 7 years ago?
Yeah.
I thought that was, someone could have told me that was a year ago or 2 years ago. I would have believed them.
Yeah. It's freaky. Or even a year. Like, I thought that was last month. Hello.
That when you told me you've been working with me since September 13th, 3 years ago,
yes.
I just about fell off my rocker.
like you've been drinking. Something's wrong with
you. I was like, what is, what? You,
yeah.
Are you, that's a bad joke. Oh, dear.
Or maybe it's a good joke. It all depends how you look at it.
I'm just reading words. It's called bad joke.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, like, you know, you could just say, I want to go cuckoo. I actually feel a little cuckoo today.
I think there's some Mercury retrograde going on.
Okay, I'm done. I'm done playing. That's all I got to say is I'm done. Is it about the? Are you talking retrograde right now?
Yeah, apparently. Somebody told me, and somebody that's no longer my friend told me. No, just joking. But yeah, no.
It was a rough weekend. Mercury retrograde. It was a rough weekend. Many friendships were destroyed. No, I'm only kidding.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Okay.
It is Mercury retrograde.
Yeah.
But apparently it's some kind of good Mercury retrograde.
Okay.
It's a good energy. Holy shit, it's Mercury retrograde next week.
This week?
I'm going to blame it on everything that goes wrong over the next month. I'm just blaming it on Mercury retrograde.
I think that's a smart move.
Yeah, I don't have to be responsible at all. I just blame it on the universe.
That's right. Goddamn universe.
It's not my fault. What do you want from me? So we'd love to do some coaching today. You know, in the last couple of weeks, I've been talking a lot. Like, if you've seen any of my Facebook Lives, if you've seen some of my emails that have gone out, I've been talking about emotional flashbacks. I've been talking about, just for me, I'm starting to recognize, like, it's just crazy how much I don't even realize I am constantly still trying to manage underlying fear.
Mm.
Like, for example, do you ever have this only way, like, this is where I'm recognizing it. Like, you know, it could happen anywhere. But, okay, you're driving in your car, and you have this instant fear, like someone's just pulled out and you have to hit your brakes. I'm using an example of true, like, fear, right?
Mm-hmm.
I actually have this, I've suddenly been aware of, like, all of the body feelings, the sensations of what that feels like in your body, so you can start to become aware of it. And I realize I literally have a racing pins and needle, electrifying, almost like you put your finger in a socket. I'm not even joking. That is actual physical sensation I get on my body when I feel stress.
So the reaction is matching what just happened.
Well, the reaction happens so fast that you realize, well, I realize, okay, if my body goes into that state of stress over this, it can't be over this. It's that there's this stress under the surface, these emotions, these feelings, what it really comes down to is our emotions. We don't want to feel certain feelings. We don't want to feel certain emotions. They felt paralyzing at times. They felt too hard to process at a certain time. Maybe something happened when you were young and you felt powerless or helpless or hopeless. And for a lot of us, those are feelings that we think, I can only speak for me.
Mm-hmm.
I hate the feeling of powerlessness. I hate the feeling of hopelessness. I hate the feeling of helplessness. I hate the feeling of overwhelm. I hate the feeling of, like, my brain's racing faster than I can slow the thoughts down to get, like, all of that. So I think for a lot of us, we hate those feelings. Like, do you like those feelings?
No. And I'll do everything in my power to avoid those feelings.
Right. So this is what happens. So we all have certain feelings that we don't even realize are quite unconscious. I mean, we all have certain things. Like some of us might be failing. The idea of failing is just so, the idea of being embarrassed, the idea of, we all have certain yucky feelings. And mm-hmm. and there the different experiences for each of us are triggered by certain, you know, we're out and about, the car pulls out, and all of a sudden, rather than it just being a car pulled out, I get this sensation of pins and needles that goes right up my leg, and it's almost like I just put my finger in a socket, and I think, wow, that's horrible that mm-hmm. feeling can create that level of an emotional reaction in my body, a physical reaction in my body. So it's been really powerful for me to just sort of really checking in, saying, okay, what if it's this resistance to this feeling? The resistance to the feeling that causes so much extra energy.
Mm.
That's really when, you know, I almost want to just grab a book that I've been reading. Oh, here it is. I want to read something to you about trauma. This came from the book, The Body Keeps the Score, Brain, Mind, and Body in the Healing of Trauma. And I found this really interesting. It takes, he's talking just for sort of trauma. And trauma, he says, you don't have to be a combat soldier or visit a refugee camp in Syria or the Congo to encounter trauma. Trauma happens to us, to our friends, our families, our neighbors. He sort of just talks about all the ways that we have, but how resilient we are, you know. But trauma, so many ways. Trauma, by definition, is unbearable and intolerable. So he talks about whether it's like a rape victim, a combat soldier, children have been molested. And, you know, how we try to push it out of our minds, trying to act as if nothing happened and move on. And it takes tremendous energy, he says, to keep functioning while carrying the memory of terror and the shame of utter weakness and vulnerability. We all want to move beyond trauma, the part of our brain that is devoted to ensuring our survival. It's deep below our rational brain, is not very good at denial. Long after a traumatic experience is over, it may be reactivated at the slightest hint of danger, and mobilize disturbed brain circuits and secrete massive amounts of stress hormones. This precipitates unpleasant emotions, intense physical sensations, and impulse and aggressive actions. These post-traumatic, that's really what it is, post-trauma,
mm-hmm.
post-traumatic reactions feel overwhelming. It's like a feeling of out of control. We often begin to fear that we are damaged to the core and beyond redemption. So I've become just so fascinated as you know, we're getting ready for the next telecourse, just really recognizing how many of us, the syndrome. We might not say, oh, I have post-traumatic stress syndrome. We might not even think of ourselves as even going through a lot of trauma. But, you know, it's unbelievable how many of us actually are. How many of us are, you know, we grew up with a lot of stress or dysfunction or way too much drama or abuse, or whether it was verbal or physical or sexual, or, and, you know, it's interesting now. Here I am at 45 years of age, and all of the successes I've had, all of the work, all of the books I've read, I never, ever thought of myself as someone who had PTSD, someone who had never. Because, like, you've been, I mean, I don't mean to say you, but when you look at your life, Yvette, would you look back at certain things and think, yeah, there were a lot of traumas, or no? Like, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but.
If I really think about it, yes, but when I think of an overall, oh, no, I'm fine. Like, when
right,
I,
that's
I'm
what we do.
Today, we're fine, right? Yeah.
That's what I mean. We do this. We're so resilient. Like, no, you wouldn't think of yourself as having post-traumatic stress. Very few of us actually take that on.
Mm-hmm.
But would you say that, when you look back, you realize, yeah, there were traumas. There were things that I've never
absolutely.
Really dealt with.
100%.
And now we put so much energy to, he says it takes tremendous energy to function while carrying the memory of terror and that shame inside of being vulnerable. So much so that we will do almost anything to avoid anybody, any situation, we call it a trigger. But I started thinking about even the word trigger and thinking, what's really a trigger? A trigger is an emotional flashback. Someone has triggered you. Why are they triggering you? Because they're actually creating an emotional flashback. They've said something that you might say, oh, they trigger me, they piss me off. But the truth is, they've created a flashback, a feeling we never want to feel, a feeling we do almost anything to avoid, if it means avoiding certain people, if it means going certain places, if it means avoiding really living our life, really living our life, really living our greatest life, really living our truth, really living what we love, because that energy that it takes to avoid feeling certain feelings, so it might have been a failure you had as a child, coming in second, coming in last, never being chosen. It could be a really traumatic tragedy that, you know, and so I just spent so much time really breaking down what is it that I do. What is it that I really do? You know, and a lot of times we teach a telecourse or I do a retreat and I think, well, what is it that I really do? And I know I'm putting you on the spot, but, I mean, do you think of it in a nutshell like that, or would it be too big to, because I have this call with Darren Weissman, say, for example, coming up, and he's like, so, Krista, we're going to get on there, and you're going to do one of your processes, and we're going to just, you know, really what you do, and it became almost even that became overwhelming, because I thought, well, it's not a one-time process that I teach. It's a really safe place that I create.
Well, it's not a, put it in a nutshell. It's such a unique, and based on what's being presented, is what you do. It's not black and white, dot the I's, cross the T's, and add water and stir. There's so many factors to it.
Yeah.
So if you were to ask me, what is it that you do? And I say you conduct people's healing, help them get to a place of authenticity and helping them work through what they need to for the best life that they can live.
And it's not a one-time, it's not a, oh, we do this, like you just said, this cookie-cutter process that, oh, come in and I can teach everybody the process. So it's, again, to talk about the 12 weeks as an example, I would say first off, we create what I started it, but it's really creating a really safe, sacred place for a healing to occur. You have to have a safe place where you can be heard and you can witness and you can watch and you can ask yourself tough questions and you can have the safety of sharing the answers when you're ready, if you're ready, when you're ready. There's something very powerful about being in a sacred place of healing. There's something very powerful about learning how to ask yourself the right questions to sort of be the conduit of your own healing. There's something really powerful about being validated and witnessed, and being able to speak of a trauma in a way that doesn't re-traumatize us. There's something about the way that we do this that allows us to almost really empty out all those stored, stagnant, hurtful, wounded memories in a way that allows us to, like you just said, it's almost like you almost start to remember, not that you remember them differently, but you recontextualize them in a way where they serve you now rather than drain you, exhaust you, hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think eventually we even get to a place, and it's a process of forgiveness, of actually reaching a point where we can say, no, I would never invite that person to do it again or anyone to do that to me again. I don't, would never say what happened was okay. I would never say what you did to me was all right. But I no longer want to hold on to the anger that I have at you or the world or myself or anybody. I no longer want to hold on to that shame and that story. I need to just own it. It is what it is. You did your part. I did my part. We both learned valuable lessons out of it. Maybe I learned how to love. Maybe I learned how to forgive. Maybe I learned what acceptance is. Maybe I learned how stubborn I am or how controlling I am or how angry I am. Whatever it is, I think forgiveness is really reaching a point that you can say, I learned a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
I learned a lesson.
And I think forgiveness for yourself, too, because I think a lot of times, you know, we don't have the awareness when it's going on. And we're just doing things by the best that we know how or whatever belief systems we have within us. And I really think it's about forgiving ourselves after the fact, too, that we maybe weren't perfect in a situation.
No, rarely are we. How many of us are perfect in all our situations? Maybe
well, I'd like
we...
to think I'm perfect a lot, but anyway.
I gotta start coughing now. No, I'm just kidding.
Those are words that choke on. Yes. But you know, quite often we beat ourselves up too. I can't believe I acted that way or I did that. I shouldn't have. But sometimes we're not even aware of our behavior. We're caught up in the emotion, the reactivity of it. And you know, at the end of the day, you look at the mess that was created and go, oh, shit.
Yeah.
You forgive yourself for being a part of that and not knowing at the time.
Yeah, and I think, though, true forgiveness can't happen until you've sort of walked through all of these steps, almost like climbing a ladder. I always just take it back to this. Forgiveness comes almost imagine a dimmer switch on a, you know, a dining room wall or a ladder. Mm-hmm. Forgiveness comes once it's full spectrum, once you've reached the top of the ladder, once you've reached this real, your higher self, once you've really stepped out of the muck, down there in the muck. Almost imagine it's like there's a valley, there's a dungeon. You're climbing up out of the muck, out of all of those feelings that aren't bad feelings. When you're in them, they are there to teach mm-hmm. us something when we're in them. But forgiveness comes when we can kind of rise up above it, look down on it, see the lessons in it. And this all takes awareness. It really takes you being able to ask yourself the right questions or have someone that can ask you the right questions. And that's just the ability to pull yourself up and out of it. But the other work that we do when we talk about all the processes is, okay, so I am being triggered. Now what do I do with this? I am being triggered. Mm-hmm. I give people the actual process to say, okay, you're triggered. Stay with this. Now I have 10 steps. You're going to have to write down on a journal the answers. And these answers, by the time you get to the 10th question, you will have pulled yourself out of the muck, recognized what they're really triggering in you, what wound is being triggered in you. And we give you an opportunity to heal that story so it doesn't have to lie dormant, hidden, ashamed somewhere inside of you, like you're just hoping no one ever plugs into that story again. And mm-hmm. that's a hard way to go through life.
Yeah.
So for me, walking on eggshells, even with yourself, though. You're not only walking on eggshells with the world, you begin to walk on eggshells with yourself because you become so easily flooded by people. This is me. Like, I've gone through this period where I'm really doing this self-awareness. Like, I'm always doing it. But especially leading into this telecourse, it's like a real self-awareness of, like, what am I feeling? What am I really feeling? What is this bringing up for me? Where did I learn that this is such an unaccessible thing to feel? What could this feeling teach me? How long has this feeling been inside of me? Okay, let's give that feeling an age then. How long is this feeling? Okay, now if I were to give this age and this feeling an archetype, say out of my book, The Emotional Edge, let's say, I've been feeling this since I was 14. What is the feeling? I'm angry. Okay, let's find the archetype in there. For those of you that have my book, The Emotional Edge, for those of you who are getting ready for my course tomorrow night, imagine being able to look it over and saying, oh my God, that's my rebellious teenager. My rebellious teenager is trapped somewhere inside of me, and she's fighting for her life right now, and she's creating so much pain in my body. She's in the back of my neck right now, wanting to scream and yell and cry and swear at people. And so how long is she? She's about 14. And tell me about her, and tell me what she needs me to learn. What does my angry 14-year-old want? What does she need? This becomes very powerful work that actually allows you to look within yourself, that you realize people are triggering me to get to know myself better. Every time someone triggers me, or every time I have an emotional flashback, every time I have that pins and needles that race up my leg, I can either go take, I don't have anything, like as I say that, the truth is I don't have anything that I would take for it, but some people would say, go and take a Valium, or you'd go and take some pill, or you'd go and take something. Well, I might have a glass of wine in fairness. There's times where I think at the end of the day, but even that, I think, I don't want that. I don't want to have something. I want to be able to just really be in the feeling and say, what is this here to teach me? What is this feeling here to do? Where have I not protected myself? Where have I not stood up for myself? Why is my 14-year-old teenager rearing her ugly head right now? What does she want from me? What does she need so she can settle down? What is she angry about? And this work is so powerful because it really allows you to dialogue with yourself, to connect with yourself, and then to soothe and ease and heal yourself. So I just really, really love, I'm so excited about the conversation I'm going to be having at 2 o'clock Eastern, so in about 40 minutes, with Darren Weissman, because again, he has this lifeline process. But the same thing, it's so much the body, and when I get disconnected from my body, I disconnect from my healing. So one of the things I would love everyone to do right now, and I'm seeing some hands going up, so I'd love to do some coaching with you today. Star 2 on your telephone. We'll put you in the queue, and it will just show us that you'd like to get some coaching done today. But one of the great things is using your body as a gift to show you where you're still suffering, where you haven't healed a memory, where you're holding on to something that you don't want to face, where the body is this brilliant messenger that constantly shows you where things are still sore. So when I have things that come up on me, my body starts aching, something starts hurting, I'm in the car and all of a sudden I have that racing pins and needles. All of those are these opportunities to heal. The body is this brilliant messenger that gives us all these opportunities to heal. Because the truth is, when you feel an emotion, if you were to actually ask yourself, where do I feel it, you can go into your body and find the spot. Do you do that, Yvette, very often?
I do. I go and I talk to that spot, too. What is it trying to tell me? Not trying. What is it telling me? What's the message?
Yeah. What's the message? And how long has it been here? And when's the first time I felt this? And how long does it go back to? And who is it connected to? And who am I in there? What archetype am I in that spot of my body? Am I passive? Mm-hmm. Am I aggressive? Is it a wounded place? Is it an angry place? Is it a scared place inside my body? What is it? Who's really in there? And this becomes incredibly powerful. So I'd love to go to our phone lines today. We're going to have to call the line short in about 30 minutes. We're only going to do about 30 minutes of coaching today. So I'm going to go right to our very top of the line. And it's definitely someone who is overseas because it's a long number. And love to coach you today. So who's calling in from overseas today?
Hi, Crystal.
Hi. Is this Lucinda?
Is it Lucinda? Yeah.
Lucinda, darling, how are you?
Yeah, no, I'm doing all right.
You're where are you at? Fill us in for those
Oh, my God.
Yeah, give the quick version, the really kind of pull it all together. Do you want me to do it?
Yeah, you do it.
No, you do it. Go.
Oh, me do it or you do it?
Yeah, you do it.
From when? Since which bit?
Well, the whole big story. You were a successful horseback rider. You were a dentist for horses. Tell the whole quick thing. Then you had a traumatic accident where you were smashed. You were paralyzed from that accident. You had to move back home with your parents. All of your childhood wounds and issues had to come up. Your parents ended up getting a divorce. Your body has been in this massive state of crisis and healing. You were getting back on your feet. You started working again. You were being able to be more mobile. And then you've had something that has set you back. Has it been a couple of months now?
Yeah, a couple of months at the end of June.
And so at the end of June, what happened?
I couldn't stand up.
You just
woke up one morning and it was
just not, your legs weren't working again.
No, I just literally one afternoon, I just went for a lay down because I wasn't feeling very good and I had a little sleep and then I woke up and I couldn't stand up. Mm. It was like the pain in my body. When I tried to stand, my legs just went there. So,
wow. So you've got a massive team of people that are working around you, and are you in the hospital still? Where are you at now?
No, I'm out. I'm out of the hospital, but it's been so traumatic because people where I was living with, where I was helping out at the stud, on the morning.
Say that again. I'm having a little bit of trouble hearing you. Just say that again.
They kept me in. I was in hospital for 5 weeks, and they've done numerous injections into the spine to numb out the pain in my legs. Basically what's happening is it's degenerating and the soft tissue, the scar tissue is doing something to the nerves, so effectively not allowing me to allow too much pain, I guess. I'm not really 100%
sure. Okay, so let me just again, there might just be a little bit of just the sound is a little bit. So you were in so much pain, you've been getting injections into your spine to kill the pain, but is what's happening a rejuvenating thing in your body, or is something regenerating and it's hurting, or is there...
It's degenerating.
It's degenerating.
But I am walking again with an aid, and I'm getting a wheelchair so I can, as long as my bits of walking are good, and then I don't get too tired.
Yeah.
So that's going to be good.
Yeah.
What happened to me was, though, on the morning of my discharge, so I was in there for 5 weeks, had loads of physio and occupational therapy, and I had some psychotherapy because I kind of got a bit upset in there.
I bet.
And so I'm really upset now, actually. And on the morning of the discharge, people are staying.
Okay, slow down for a sec. Take a deep breath. Just stay with me for a minute. Take a nice deep breath. So on the morning of your discharge, what was happening?
The people where I was staying and helping.
The people that you were staying with and helping?
Yeah, they told me I couldn't go back there. So I was effectively homeless. And I had to be discharged as homeless.
So they told you in the morning of your discharge that because you'd been working and living with them, because you'd also been working for them.
Yeah.
And so on the morning of your discharge, you found out you don't have a place
to stay. She rang me. Yeah, she rang me and said that you can't come back here. And then she rang the ward to tell him that I couldn't go back there either, to make sure that they didn't discharge me back there. So I was discharged homeless without any services to help me, physio or anything. And two friends came and picked me up because I couldn't drive at the time.
Yeah.
So, and so, yeah, it was pretty shit. And she kept saying to me all along, but I'll keep your dog for you, I'll keep your dog for you. And I thought, you're not last thing you're having is my dog.
Yeah.
So I went and picked her up.
Okay, so, yes, yeah, so just because I'm having... Yvette, are you hearing her no problem, or is it just me? Oh, Yvette's muted her line.
No, just me. I'm unmuted now because my cat was going crazy in the back.
Yeah.
I'm hearing her fine.
Okay, great.
I hear that she's upset, but I do hear what she's saying.
Okay. So I'm going to turn my fan down because I think it's me. So, Lucinda, so you've gone through so much, and then on the morning I know your family are, you know, you struggle with them. Where's your mom at?
Okay. Mom's been quiet. She wouldn't let me go there because she didn't have any room at her new house, so there was nothing there. My sister didn't have anywhere, and my dad didn't. So basically two friends that were over from overseas came and picked me up because they were here on holiday, and I stayed in their hotel for 5 nights with them. We went and picked my dog up, and we got my few clothes because she wasn't even going to let me do that. And I just
the people that you were living with suddenly get angry with you?
I don't know. She said to me, "You're not allowed back in the home because you're a liability to me because you're unsafe on your feet." That is what she said.
Yeah. So what she's saying is, you would become. So in other words, while you were here, you weren't a friend, you weren't family, you were an employee, and you lived in our house, and you could get around on your own. But now that you can't get around on your own, we can't be taking care of you.
Yeah, basically. But they were friends. That's the thing.
Yeah.
What are meant to
devastating.
Be friends,
I get it. I get it.
It's or even time for transition. Time. For
yeah. There's no time for
out.
You to figure out where you're going to go, and that was your home. Do they have the right to do that? Like, I know you wouldn't want to live somewhere where you aren't wanted, but did they legally have the right to do that?
I guess so, because it wasn't my home. I wasn't paying to be there.
Yeah.
So, and in hospital, they were begging for me not to, because I could have gone and stayed in a home, in the homeless home. And I wouldn't do that because I wanted to go get my dog, because I couldn't have my dog if I went to one of those homes. And
yeah. So where are you staying now? Where are you staying now?
Basically, my friends were amazing, and the next day I just get on the computer and I look for properties that I could rent that were within a couple of hours of Bath, Bristol area, and I found one. I rang up about it, and literally it only gone on 10 seconds before I rang. And anyway, I went and saw it the next day. Anyhow, cut long story short, I've rented a little cottage and I've moved in all in the space of 4 weeks.
So I don't know if I'm having trouble just completely understanding you with an accent, and Yvette is English, so she's getting the whole thing. But so did you say that you found a little cottage that you've rented?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're there now?
Yeah.
And how are you feeling in the cottage?
Yeah, I just feel I'm all right. I'm all right. It's really pretty and stuff.
So the place is, so that's pretty. That part is pretty. But you're hurt. Your feelings are hurt, and you're sad, and you're angry, and your body is failing you, and you're pissed off. And you're tell me what you're feeling.
I'm just really pissed off, and it's coming to the anniversary, 7 year anniversary of the accident, and there's a couple of issues that I need to sort out with the accident that didn't go quite well with the courtroom, and I've got until the 14th of September to start something on
it. It was 7 years since the accident, and you haven't gotten an insurance claim yet, and now you're in the final stages of that? Is that what you're saying?
No, I've had a very small insurance claim, what didn't represent the accident. And I've been advised to look into it again to reopen up the claim.
Yeah, you were hit head on by a Mack truck, I think. Was that like a huge truck?
Yeah, by a 44-ton truck head on.
And you've got a tiny insurance claim. How can that be? You've been paralyzed and your entire life has changed completely, dramatically, 360 for 7 years.
Yeah. Well, basically, the solicitor didn't do his job and nor did the police. And so yesterday I made some phone calls about getting a legal guy to help me with it and whether I go with it or not. And anyway, literally today, it feels like it's the day after the accident. Like, I got really upset talking to him, and my body just feels like it's, I felt like this morning I woke up and it was the day after the accident.
You're so sore.
Just back there.
Yeah, your body is revisiting it. It's revisiting that memory, the trauma. You've been in trauma physically and emotionally for 7 years. Your adrenal glands are probably just so exhausted, just your emotions, just having to, you know, carry this for so long and to feel so alone.
Yeah. And like some people are saying to, like, a couple of friends have said to me, don't, you know, you should be grateful for what you've got. And I am grateful for
what
I've got.
Who talks to you like that?
A couple of friends on the phone have said, you know, why do you want to go back there and look at it legally? And then some other people say to me, well, you'll always look over your shoulder if you don't revisit it.
So help me understand the dilemma right now, and I know there's a lot, I get that, but the fire that needs to be put out right now is that you have to make a decision by September 14th. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Okay, and the decision you have to make it very clear to me. Tell me what decision you have to make by September 14th.
Is that if I'm going to reopen a claim against the solicitor that didn't do a very good job for me.
Okay.
I'm going to sue the solicitor.
Okay, so the solicitor, you're going to sue the solicitor, but what about reopening the actual claim against the insurance company?
No, that can't be done because of the paperwork that happened at the time when the solicitor advised me to settle for $56,000.
$56,000, so that he got his cut?
Yeah, pretty much.
Because he wanted his money. This is a million-dollar claim.
So this is what I was told by the barrister in London. He said, because what happened is after my accident, I got a friend of mine to do some of my work for me because I was self-employed. So I wanted to look after my clients in case I could have gone back to work.
Yeah.
So I had another dentist who's a friend who would come and do some of my work, some of my clients.
Yeah.
And he's literally looking after them for me, in the hope that I'd get back to it. But in a court of law, it proved that I could earn an income from my business. Therefore, it wasn't good to proceed for it. I should accept the offer I'd been given.
No, it wasn't just your business. It's what your whole body has gone through, your emotions, your whole body. You've been paralyzed. It's not just an income that you're going after. It's all the pain and suffering you've been through.
Mm-hmm. And that you can't put a number on.
Right. So the question is, you have to make a decision by September 14th if you're going to go back and decide that the solicitor did not act in your best interest.
Yeah.
Okay, I want you to tell me something. I want to do something quick with you. And I want you to just go with this quickly. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being that solicitor did not take care of you properly and 1 being that he did take care of you. I feel like I said it wrong. On the scale of 1 to 10, 10 being that he took care of you really, really well and 1 being that he did not take care of you really well. Give me your number.
He didn't take care of me.
So what number would you give him on a scale of 1 to 10?
How much he took care of me?
Yeah.
0.
1? Did you say
no,
1?
0.
0?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, the idea of just letting that go and never dealing with it again, 10 being it feels ten being I would want to deal with it, I need to deal with it, I need to take care of this, something in my gut says I need to, and 1 being I just want to put this behind me and I don't want to revisit it ever again. Just give me a quick number.
Eight.
Don't overthink it. On a scale
eight.
Of 1 to 10, an 8. Okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, the amount of stress that it's going to take to not revisit this, on a scale of 1 to 10 versus the amount of stress it would take to visit it. So let's imagine it's going to be really stressful to revisit this, and it's not going to be that stressful to revisit this. Give me a number.
Oh,
10 being it's going to be really stressful. 1, it's not going to be that much harder.
Oh, 10. It's going to
so
be
you,
10.
You feel like it is a big battle. It's going to be a big battle.
It's huge, yeah, because I'm looking at it again.
Okay. So what part of it is going to be a big battle? Looking at it again, dealing with fighting a lawyer, or just feeling the feelings of the accident again?
All of it.
Okay. Dealing with the lawyer, not feeling the feelings of the accident. Let's talk about dealing with a lawyer that you should have gotten $1 million and you got $56,000. Dealing with that lawyer, would it give you relief to deal with this, or would it give you more stress to deal with this?
It would give me relief from a positive outcome. It wouldn't give me relief dealing with it.
Okay, so now who would be the person to support you through this, so that obviously it's not you alone having to deal with this with the lawyer? Do you have a support person?
Not at the moment.
Do you have a lawyer that would step in and take care of this case for you?
I'm trying to find one now.
Do you have someone that you... So you don't actually have someone that says, yeah, we can fight this?
I've got someone that I've got a meeting with next Monday to talk to.
And why does the decision have to be made by September 14th?
Because just the timelines of it all, before it gets too difficult.
Here's what you need to do. You absolutely need to file it so that you've gotten it in the timeline.
Yeah.
File it.
Yeah.
File it. Just so that if it's a 7-year anniversary and you can't go, any, get it done. Just get it in there. Just you've got to at least start that process. Revisiting it might be such a magnificent healing opportunity for you.
Yeah, I've thought that too.
Full circle moment of owning it, being in it, revisiting it, feeling it, documenting it, telling your story, owning what you've been through, turning it into something positive. What if you were to... My brain always goes here, and I don't mean to, but my brain always goes to, what if you told that story? What if you had, some people behind you that helped you tell that story? What if you started getting media around that story? What's the story? What is the story that you want to be told?
What story do I want to be told?
Yeah, do you have a story around this that as a story of hope or redemption or healing or strength or power or mistakes you've made? Is there a story in there that you feel that if you could tell that story, it would help someone else? Or what around this? I'm just trying to feel something here for you, with you.
I feel I need to heal myself from it.
Yeah.
And
how do you think
you
would heal yourself from it? What kind of things would you do for you to help you heal this?
Basically, I'd like to see the truck drivers.
Right. Here's the thing I know. That when we lay down and we give up, there's something about our energy and our power that gets lost in that. And when we make the decision to say, I honor my life. I honor what I'm going through. I'm in this. This isn't about revisiting something. You're still struggling walking. This isn't like, I got over this. It happened 7 years ago. I don't really want to revisit it. You're in it.
Yeah.
And maybe fighting for yourself. Maybe getting angry about what happened to you. Maybe about saying, no one has paid the bill here but me. Maybe deciding
like.
To... Pardon?
That's what it feels like. It feels like I'm paying the bill for their mistake.
Yeah. How long is that going to work for you? It's not working.
No, it's not working.
What if you channeled some of that anger, that hurt, that pissed offness, that frustration into what would courage have you do, Lucinda? What would courage have you do?
I want to say walk away and build a new life.
And what would that begin to look like as you start to build a new life? Let me ask you this. Do you have enough money? I don't mean to put you on the spot. Do you have enough money to just move forward right now in your life and to never revisit this again, put this all behind you, have enough money to take care of whatever therapy you need, help you need for the rest of your life, and to build a new life. Do you have enough right now to support yourself?
This is where the case is able to be opened again potentially because I had.
Okay, I just got lost. I couldn't even tell anything you said for the last 10 seconds. Say that again to me.
Basically, just recently, I had a small insurance policy with my bank, and I've just been paid out more by that than I was by my compensation.
So do you
have
a little
money.
What if you were to put some, now, what you need to look at is, you need to speak with a lawyer and say, what would it cost to reopen this? Is it worth it? How much money realistically could I get back? How much money could I sue that trucking company? How much money could I, putting all that in, sometimes you have to just weigh it out. It's literally like on a pros and cons list. You have to look at it and say, the energy it's going to take, the money it's going to take, the fight it's going to take, what is the probability of me succeeding?
Yeah.
The other option is, I'm just going to focus on building my life now. And what's that going to look like? And you have to decide. You know, for many years, I never went after, I know it's not even the same, but my first husband and I split up. I tell this story a little bit. It's nothing in comparison to what you're going through. But we battled a lot. We battled a lot over he thought he could pay what he wanted when he wanted. And I just always thought, I don't have the energy, the money, the time to put into fighting him. So I just put all my energy and time into building my life. 12 years later, when he was still being a douchebag, I decided to sue him. It was insanely expensive. It was insanely draining. It was insanely, there was just so many, it cost $120,000 just to get him to pay his child support. However, when it was all said and done, the feeling that I had that I won, that he owed me $180,000 in back support, that, like, when it all was said and done, I said, oh, shit. I would never have done it had I known what I was going to go through, but man, I'm so glad I did. Because it's over now, and I won. And wow, that felt great. Had I known what I was going to be in for, I don't know if I would have put myself through that much stress for 3 or 4 years of courts and lawyers and constantly coming up with money. So you have to ask yourself, are you going to have to constantly come up with money? Are you going to be constantly pulled back into courts? Is it just a one big freaking nightmare? And what's going to be your payoff at the end? Versus let it go, move on, build a life.
Yeah, that's where I'm at.
And what feels like on a scale of 1 to 10, move on, build a life, or no, pay some money to a lawyer and let them go to work and do what they can do?
Oh, there's two sides to me. There's one side that just says move on and, you know, I think, I don't know whether it's a fairy tale in my head to move on and it's all going, you know, you can build this amazing life and it'd be great. And
but you can build that amazing life anyways. You're going to build that amazing life anyways. So the question is, do I go back and say to that lawyer, it's been 7 years and I'm still not walking and I settled for $56,000 and I haven't been able to work properly in 7 years. I haven't been able to walk.
Yeah.
So you have to decide. I would at least see, I would pursue it. And then I would make a decision.
Yeah.
I would not cut that off. I would absolutely keep your option open. And if it turns into a bit of a battle and you've got a great lawyer and there's a bit of money going to that lawyer, but in the end you say, I won. There's something about court. There's something about, as much as we say the legal system and the justice and this doesn't fail and it fails us, and there's something about whether you've been abused. You were badly abused. Even though it was a car accident, it might not have been anybody's direct intention to hurt you. You have been severely, physically, emotionally, financially, mentally abused and traumatized. And you have to make, there's something sometimes about just that day in court and standing up for yourself and fighting for what's rightfully yours. And there's something about that sometimes that gives you such a feeling of power at the end, such not a power trip, but such a feeling of dignity, such a feeling of self-respect, such a feeling of I did it. It can't come, like, you can't be like, I'm going to either put all my energy into fighting that or building a good life. You're going to have to put your energy into building a good life. Mm-hmm. If you can let that be in the peripheral and you've got a lawyer that's helping, I say why not? Yvette, what do you think?
I think keep your options open and go for it. And if you feel at any point in time where it's just not worth going that direction, you can change your mind.
And
but
here's the thing.
Keep
and keep a real pulse on what you're spending. Because here's the one problem. Sometimes when you get in too deep, then you're like, I can't. Now you're gambling almost. Like, I can't. If I walk away now, that I'd be wasting $30,000. That's crazy. But do I put more in? So you got to just really almost make a decision from the get-go. Find out what the lawyer says. Find out what the chances of you winning are. Find out what the chances of how much. Like, but I would say, yeah, there's something in you that you need to fight for some type of justice right now. I can feel that in you. Even when you say, I think one of your questions was, yes, it's going to be hard. It's a 10, but my lawyer did not serve me. He was a 1, and what he did to me was a 0, was wrong, and it's wrong.
Yeah, it has been wrong. The whole, you know, even to come out of hospital recently was wrong.
Yeah, everything about it's wrong. And I think there's a lot of emotion. Your parents haven't been there for you the way you needed. Your sister wasn't there for you the way you needed. And I think you've got to keep reaching out. You know, I think you're signed up for our next telecourse. I think I saw that. Are you? Which is, keep, we need support. We need community. So even though I'm on the other side of the world, the other side of the pond, we need us. You need us. You need us.
Yeah.
We need you. We need each other. You need to stay connected. You need to keep your mentorship coaching. You need as much support because you don't have a family that supports you like a lot of us don't. So you're in such crisis that you need support. So every bit of support you can get, stay checked in with you know, just decide that your healing is number one most important thing to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
nothing is more important.
Yeah, I feel the weakest I've felt ever now.
The weakest?
Yeah.
I'm so glad we're starting a telecourse tomorrow night because this is going to give you a real sense of support and love and connection again and to build you back up and get feeling emotionally strong because you've just been through the ringer again. And, you know, it's getting that inner light built back up, that inner confidence built back up, knowing you've got people around you that are supporting you, that are there standing with you. Yvette, what? I know that I can't talk too much longer. I got to jump off and get on my Zoom call.
You've got to go into the next call. But I think you know what the right answer is for you. You know it. And we're here to support you, whatever decision you make.
I think I just heard Lucinda laugh.
Thank you.
What's the answer, Lucinda? You know it.
Oh, I gotta do what's right. My answer is I think I'll always regret it if I don't file it at least.
I think you're right. I think the question is always, I gotta do what's right. I think that's always the answer.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is always, I've gotta do what's right. And you've gotta do what's right for you. There isn't a right path, but there is something that's right for you, and you can feel it in your gut when something doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
And if something doesn't feel right, you've got to have the courage to do what you can do to make things right for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've been trying to get on this call for 3 weeks now.
Well, there you go.
Wow, I'm so glad you got on
there's
today.
That free again.
I'm glad we've talked. How are you feeling right now? I know there's not a lot that came out of this, but how are you feeling right now?
Yeah, I don't have so much pain. I don't have so much pain in the body. I don't know. It's weird to say that when I woke up this morning, I felt like I'd been bashed and bruised and felt like I was in the accident again. And I don't feel like I've got so much shock in the body.
Yeah. It's memory.
Thank you very much.
It's memory.
And it's
so we're going to do some wonderful meditations that will help. We're going to do some real, you know, through the telecourse, just really going into those memories and clearing it out and really trying to just let the body, you let your body, God, all of our bodies, but just get right back into as close to alignment as possible. And, you know, you are living proof because I know that you are someone who, you connected with me at a time when you were right on death's doorstep, really. You were ready to pack it in. You couldn't, you know, and look how far you came. And we're going to do it again. We're going to do it again, and you're going to surpass.
I did get back there in hospital.
You know, and you had a setback, but...
You've done it. You've done it, and you can do it again.
You're going to do it again, and you're going to come out stronger, faster, and you have to have that mindset. No other mindset will serve you. No other mindset serves you than knowing I'm going to win this thing. That there's no other way to think about a problem than I'm going to handle this. I'm going to do it. I'm going to get through it. I've got this. I've got people around me that love me. I've got people around me that will support me. I will do whatever I need to do for me to get through this period, and I will.
Yeah. No, you're right. I need to get that mindset back.
You will, and it's about being in that right mindset by being around the right people that encourage the right thinking, that just keep reminding yourself, like, you matter, I matter, my life matters, and I'm going to do what I've got to do to get myself in a great place again, and you will.
Yeah, no, I will.
And you will.
I will do it.
And you will. Darling, we're going to have 12 weeks together, and I'm really, really happy about that, because we'll be able to connect and share, and, you know, just sometimes being able to talk to someone can make just a world of difference. So
yeah,
I hope that today we were able to...
Really, today is amazing, It really helped me. Thank you.
I wish I could do so much more, but I definitely say take the next step and don't let that window of opportunity pass you by where you didn't... really do what you needed to do to protect you and your future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I didn't. I need to because, I need to.
Absolutely. Lucinda, thank you, darling. I love you, and I wish we could do more, but we are sending you love. So much love.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and the day will come that you'll fly back over here. We'll have another retreat.
Mm-hmm. I'd do anything to do that.
It will happen again.
Believe it.
Yeah, have faith.
I believe that.
You will.
I'll be traveling again.
You will! And I'll travel to you! It'll all be good one day soon. I send you love. I wish we could talk forever, but
guys,
I've got to run. And
I
send you love.
Okay, lots of love. Thank you.
Lots of love. Any last thoughts you just want to finish?
Keep at it and tap into the sisterhood we've developed, for support if you're feeling less than. We're here to support you.
Well, we really are. For those of you who are part of the telecourse, I think I'm going to be doing a live Facebook chat tomorrow night, and I'm going to do the whole telecourse on Facebook, so you might want to come and check that out. I think you'll love the course if you haven't signed up yet. And let's all fly over to Darren Weisman's world and get on Zoom. And now I hope my hair has dried. I think it's still a bit wet. I've got 7 minutes to go make myself look presentable.
You are presentable.
I'm already the way I am. Thank you. Thank you, Yvette. Thank you, everyone. Thanks. We'll be back next Tuesday sending everyone tons of love. Bye for now.
The moderator has left the conference. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.